Okay, we're going to take your phone call, so get ready. Marie Jones, our guest, you're next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Marie Jones, our guest. We'll take your phone calls, and here we go. Marie, you ready?
I am.
The moment they've all been waiting for. Let's go to our first time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Yes, sir.
Marie, I just got to tell you, it's an honor to speak to both of you. I've been listening to you, George, for years as a truck driver. And Marie, you have got my head just spinning. And by the way, you have the most enchanting laugh.
Oh, well, thank you.
I'm going to zip right along here because there's so much I'd want to share, but I can give you validation to your heaven and hell theory. But I had an experience shortly, I would say, a year or so after my father had passed away. And I do not think that they are related, other than the fact that I became very sensitive to things that would happen around me that other people would not see or hear.
Right.
And my sister was the same way. The story goes like this. We used to live in an old house and a very large family, and after I'd moved away, I came back to go visit my mother, stepfather, and at the time I had a 1-year-old daughter, and I had a 5-year-old stepdaughter. And when we stayed there, you know, we had a lot of bedrooms in the house, as there were 9 children at one point. And so the 5-year-old stayed upstairs in the older part of the house, and my 1-year-old was in the room next to my wife and I, in kind of the old part, new part of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And interesting, the first night we got there, the first day we got there, and this is part of my question, when we got there, the most foul, awful smell in the house, almost as though a dead animal had crawled up in the crawl space and died, had already died. And we could not locate the source of the smell, other than the fact that in the staircase or the stairwell of the old house, this smell was extremely strong.
Hmm.
And it was vile. And it was just something that we noted. And then that evening, early in the morning, I would say it was around 3 o'clock, I wake up and I hear my stepdaughter upstairs crying. So I go upstairs to investigate, see what's going on. I said, "What's wrong?" She said, "I'm scared." I said, "Well, what are you scared of?" "I don't know," she said. And I try and calm her down, and I get some coloring books, and we do a little bit of coloring, and eventually she calms down enough, and we go back to sleep. That's all that happened that night. The next night, same thing, same time. 3 o'clock, 3:11 in the morning is what I noted this time. And I check it out again, and it's the same story again, and I don't know what's going on. And she's upset. Meanwhile, the smell continues, and the smell in the stairwell is not very far from the room where she was staying. So once again, we go through the coloring book and asked her if she wanted me to stay, you know, upstairs with her or whatnot like that. She felt that she could stay by herself, but not really understanding what's going on. The third night, I wake up before she starts crying. And my stepfather was one of those kind of people that could not, you know, was one of those people that wake up in the middle of the night, would go to sleep or have to get up and read a book or maybe get a bowl of cereal or something like that. You have to understand my mother. It was a large kitchen. We had 2 stoves, 2 sinks, a lot of cupboards. And on the back of the cupboards, there was cups hanging and spoons and whatnot like that. And I could hear these doors opening and closing, and I'm thinking, okay, well, my stepfather is up, and he can't sleep, and now I can't sleep, so I'm going to get up, and I'm going to, you know, sit down and talk with him for a while. Once again, 3:11 in the morning. I walk into the kitchen. The kitchen is absolutely dark. I am watching the cupboard doors open as I walk in the kitchen. And the last of the cupboard doors open, every drawer and every door in that kitchen was wide open. I stepped into the kitchen and realizing that we may have a poltergeist visit, I speak to the spirit. And as I read, you know, I had read before that young adolescent children, and particularly females, and I'm not sure if that's true or not, seem to agitate a poltergeist. And along with my reading, the smell started to come true because they said that in the visitation of a poltergeist, there would be a foul, horrible odor. I spoke to the spirit, not that I could see it. And I said, I understand you're upset. I said, we'll be leaving soon. In the next day or so, please leave my daughters alone. And nothing else happened. When we left, I told my mother, I said, I would be fascinated to know if after we leave, the smell that we've been smelling in this house goes with us and changes to a bouquet of roses. And we left, and before we got back to North Carolina, this was in upstate New York, before we got back to North Carolina, my mother had called, and she said, 20 minutes after you left, you would not believe it. It was the most aromatic thing I'd ever smelled. It was beautiful. She also said, I was so fascinated by the fact that you thought that we had a poltergeist. I went to go look for the meaning of poltergeist in the dictionary. Now, my mother is 5'1". They have these large bookshelves in the main den, and the books are all the way up to the ceiling, on an 8-foot ceiling. Now, she does crossword puzzles on a daily basis, and so the dictionary is always handy. She could not find the dictionary. It was not. Now, you have to know my mother to know how weird this is, because everything has its place. Talk about OCD. I mean, it's unbelievable. But they could not find the dictionary. They found the dictionary the next day at the very top of the bookshelf on its side on top of the other books. Not even my stepfather could reach it. Now, my question to you is, in your matter that we've been talking about here all evening, thank you for keeping me awake, by the way, does smell and sight, like you mentioned, and sound, all that is energy? Do you think that all displaced energy?
Right. They're all different types of energy that can, you know, manifest. And I've heard so many examples of hauntings that involve odor, and especially the odor of roses. It seems to be very popular. And also foul odors. And a lot of times things that smell like sulfur or rotten eggs, you hear about
that. Well,
that
would go hand in hand with a dead animal.
Yeah, exactly. And what's really interesting about what you said is the fact that your child picked up on it, because I am a firm believer that children have, you know, they don't have the veil over their eyes that we adults seem to have. I know with my own son, who's 5 years old, that, you know, there's, and I remember from my own childhood seeing and hearing things that the adults didn't seem to see and hear, and yet they were very real to me and to my brother and sister. So I find, you know, I find that really fascinating, that children are able to pick up on these entities before we are.
Great. Hey, thanks. I appreciate that. Next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. Take it away. It's all yours.
Yeah, I have a question about Dimitri. My name's Joe, and I'm from Fairbanks, Alaska.
Yeah, Joe. Thank you.
And I was in jail, okay? And my celly, who we all called Dirty, he spoke just like Dimitri did.
Oh, really?
In his sleep. And, man, I saw the devil in this guy, and he was my celly, and I was scared. And he was saying, you know, some of the same things, like, after Good Friday, you know, that, and I was scared out of my breath, and it made me believe in the devil, and that the devil is real, so why can't God be real?
I mean, my belief is that it's all part of the same creative, destructive energy. And it sounds to me like this could be a case of somebody manifesting possibly an alternate personality, which which could come across so convincingly that, you know, I mean, we've all heard about the stories of multiple personalities and how they literally take on different voices and almost, you know, their facial expressions change so much that their face is almost completely transformed. Yeah, and so that is actually something that, you know, goes into the field of psychology a little bit, that, that maybe your cellie was manifesting another personality.
Okay.
And you, yeah, unfortunately, got to see it.
He didn't even recall doing it.
He did, well, you know, and that's something that's very key with multiple personalities, is that they never can recall when the other personalities take over from the main personality. You know, I'm not saying that
that's... So you don't think it was a spirit manifested in him?
It could have. He could have been channeling some negative energy there, too. You're not obviously there anymore, so that's a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all I had to say, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think that your cellie probably was very much a part of what he was manifesting, rather than having something, you know, a devil coming through him. I think he was, it sounds like an alternate personality kind of thing.
Great, thanks. East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Ryan, and my question was about Kundalini. Like, the way I view it is, you know how bodybuilders, they weaken their muscles and just to have them grow back stronger. And I heard this one thing about how monks, when they meditate over long periods of time, they get, you know, their brain gets tired, mm-hmm. and it rebuilds stronger. And I was wondering, over the course of a person's lifetime, is that the way to awakening Kundalini and that path?
I don't know a whole lot about the subject, but what you're touching on, you know, people that research the brain always tell us that the more we use our brain, the more neurons we get firing, the more we're going to be able to use it and expand our brain's capacity. And it makes sense that if you're increasing consciousness by meditating and doing Kundalini yoga, which I believe it's a form of yoga, that, you know, as you get better and better at it, you're going to elevate your consciousness to a level where you'll have that Kundalini experience. So it's, you know, the more you use your brain, the more your brain makes available to you, the more capacity you have. And so the same thing could be happening with consciousness. The more you raise it, the more aware you become. It raises a little higher. It's almost like a snowball effect. But I've never done Kundalini yoga, so I can't talk from personal experience.
And I have two quick questions. They're kind of tied into each other. One was, have you heard a term called fire in the head, which, like, to do with Kundalini?
Yes, I have. That's when you actually have the experience of the energy leaving the body from the top chakra, I believe. The fire in the head is what happens,
yes,
right before that. Yeah. It's kind of like an ecstatic experience. A total awareness, like the third eye opening. This is just what what I've heard about it. I've never experienced it.
And do you deal with Reiki any?
Do I do Reiki?
Mm-hmm.
No, but I have a lot of friends who've learned it, and it seems like it's really exploding. A lot of people are taking the training and becoming practitioners, but I personally don't.
And here's the last thing. To do with fire in the head, now, did you think... Then this is only speculation, but I've been, with all the things I've been researching, do you think Jesus could have done Reiki and that's how he healed people? And do you think the whole fire in the head relates to how they say he has a halo around his head?
You know, I think he was very much into the Eastern, mystical traditions. A lot of people believe that during the absent years, where we don't have any record of what he was doing, that he was in the East, and a lot of his teachings are very much in alignment with Eastern traditions. So I think you could really be onto something there.
Okay, thanks. And I'm listening from the 550 Nighthawks Old Stomping Ground.
You got it. I love that station.
Thanks. All right, thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Okay, appreciate you being part of the program. We'll go west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with Marie Jones. Hi there. Hi. Go ahead, sir. Hello.
Hello?
There you go. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Stephen. I have an experience that I'm compelled to talk about now, and I've never told anybody about it.
Oh, my gosh.
I got out of the service in the late 70s. I was in the Marine Corps, packed up all my junk in boxes, and put it in my pickup, and had a camper on it, headed across the desert, and I was on my way back to Missouri. I fueled up Kingman, got me a cup of coffee. I got about 20 miles out of Kingman. That's the last thing I remember. I came to sitting behind a tractor-trailer rig on a ramp, and it was almost daylight, and it was just shortly after midnight when I fueled up. My pickup was still full of fuel. It was about 220 miles east of Kingman where I came to. I've got a little place on my shoulder that's about half the size of an eraser that I've had ever since then. And it's a little knot that in the moon phases, it changes its texture. But sometimes it's hard as a rock, and other times it's placid, but it's painful most of the time. But I don't remember anything from that in between there.
Hmm.
And that happened whenever I was 22 years old.
Wow.
It was over 30 years ago.
Sounds like a classic example of missing time. Have you ever, well, you said you were telling us about it for the first time, so you've never, you know, talked to somebody about it or maybe looked into doing some hypnosis to try to remember what happened?
No, I never have. I know that all my stuff has been rifled through. And I was in pretty much a disarray for a long time.
Very interesting.
Okay, thanks for your call. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Well, there's so many things going on this planet. It's absolutely incredible.
It is. It really is. Mystery.
Interesting
everywhere.
Times to be alive right now.
It is, and I think it's only going to get more interesting.
I think so, too. Next up, let's go. Well, no, we're not going to have time. I'll wait until we come back at the half. And we'll finish up with the final phone calls with you. What's your next work? Is there another book on the horizon?
Yes. In fact, I'm in the middle of it now, and it's on a completely different topic. I'm writing a book with my dad, who's a retired geophysicist, called Supervolcano, the catastrophic event that changed the course of human history. And it's about the Toba supervolcano that erupted about 75,000 years ago and almost wiped out the human species. And there's some new genetic evidence that shows that everybody alive today is a descendant of a survivor of Toba. So we're going to be getting into supervolcanoes, what they are, where they're found, you know, population genetics. But most excitingly, we're going to present a scenario of what might happen when the next supervolcano erupts.
Okay, stay with us. Final phone calls just ahead with Marie Jones on Coast to Coast AM. Well, stick with us. A great group of programs for you all week long. And we'll be right back. We'll finish up with final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Marie Jones, and your final phone calls here as we wrap this up. Fascinating program, Marie. Great insight.
Oh, thank you. It's been great. I love all this mind-blowing stuff.
Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. My name is Allison from Lake Forest, California. And I really wanted to call tonight because I know how George always says you don't believe in coincidence.
Nope, not at all.
And I just wanted to share a little story with Marie about a place I used to work. And we had just gotten this new security camera system set up. And it's really good, high resolution, recorded everything on its own hard drive. And one day my manager just pulled me in and said, you got to check this out. There's something really weird on the camera. And so as it turned out, there's like, it looked like a form of energy just walking down the hall, and then it just suddenly blinked in the blink of an eye from one frame to the next out of the picture. And we studied it over and over, and there had never been any kind of anomaly like that ever since. And so we basically boiled it down to like some sort of interdimensional like warp, because the building isn't old or anything of that sort. Mm-hmm. And the coincidence part I thought was interesting when you first came on, Marie, you mentioned the holographic universe. Mm-hmm. And before I had even seen this tape, I was reading a book by Stephen Hawking called The Universe in a Nutshell.
Oh, right.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and it really, I've always been interested in ghosts, and I thought, wow, the holographic universe, that must explain why we see these transparent,
right,
like,
projections.
Energy. Yeah, and it was almost like an energy form of a person that I saw on this tape. And nothing else could ever really explain it, because I never thought of, you know, religious explanations for it. So I just was really excited to hear that you were explaining exactly what I was thinking, and that I just wanted to share that story with you. Because
I want to know what happened to the tape.
as far as I know, everything is intact, and nothing like that has ever happened again.
Right.
And it was sort of like a filmy, I don't want to say ectoplasm, but like it wasn't human, but it was just like, and it disappeared out of the blink of an eye. Mm-hmm. It was so, I can't even put words to it. It really scared me because I had to work there.
Right.
But I knew that it wasn't, I had this feeling that it was not physical in our plane, that it had just kind of like a glitch, you know?
Right.
And somehow the technology had captured it. But I just wanted to share that.
I think it would be really interesting if you could get a copy of that tape
to
people who would really like to see it.
I wish that I could. I took a picture, a couple still pictures of the screen, and I sent it in to George, but I think they probably thought it was fake. But it's definitely real.
Yeah.
There's definitely things going on in this universe that I think science will finally be able to explain.
Oh, I do too. I think it's, you know, modern science just needs to catch up, but it can explain it.
And,
that's really interesting.
Thank you for enlightening us. It's good to have someone that doesn't want to explain everything with, like, it was your dead grandmother, or I think it was just energy, because a lot of people come to this place where I work constantly day in and day out, and I think maybe it was some sort of trapped energy of some sort.
You know, there's a book that you might want to pick up by Jenny Randall's called Time Storms,
mm-hmm.
and she talks about a lot of cases of people that, you know, miss time. They enter these sort of fog banks where they lose some time, and, you know,
right.
strange things happen. But a couple of the cases that she talks about involve security video cameras that capture very interesting things that sound very similar to what you're talking about. It's out in paperback, so if you can find a copy, called Time Storms. You might be interested to read some of those cases.
Yeah, it's almost like it was someone astrally walking around. I have no idea. There's so many different explanations you could think of, but it's real, and everybody out there that is curious, there's definitely something going on in this world that...
You know what's really funny is a lot of people are putting their tapes, things like that, on YouTube. I don't know if you've seen... Yeah.
Well,
so,
yeah, they're all doing that.
Isn't that hilarious? We've got this new forum now for paranormal videos.
Yeah, I actually tried to find something that would, you know...
A way to load it on.
Good as what I saw, and there's nothing that even comes close to what I've seen. So I think I could somehow try to convince my boss to do that.
To give up the tape.
Yeah, I don't know if it's possible for her to transfer it over.
Yeah, you don't know. If they could at least make a copy.
Yeah,
interesting. Really interesting.
Okay, thanks for being on the program. Appreciate it. Let's go next. Who's been waiting the longest? Oh, let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hello?
Hello? Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Are you talking to me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Back in 1964, I'm from Michigan, or I used to live in Benton Harbor, Michigan, and I had went back there for a visit. And so all my friends hung out at this one bar, and I went down there that night to meet everybody. And I walked in, and I sat up at the bar, and I was sitting there. And this guy, I never saw this guy come in that was sitting to the left of me. I didn't see him come in. He was just there. I turned around, and he was just there. And he was trying to get a drink from the bartender. And the bartender, I knew him. He couldn't make out what he said. So I said to the guy, I know a little bit of foreign languages. And I said, where are you from? And he said, space. And I thought he meant Spain. So I said, I just give him a 7-7. That's all I, you know. So he gave him the drink. And I was like, you turn your bar around. I was sitting with my back to the bar and talking to all these people that I hadn't seen in a long time, was standing around me. And this guy was sitting there now, and he had a felt hat on. He looked like from the 40s, and a black overcoat, a black felt hat. And he was nice looking, dark but nice looking. And when I was talking to him, trying to find out what he wanted to drink, and so I was sitting there, and then somebody punched me from the right, and I turned around and looked the other way and would talk to somebody for no more than a minute and a half. And I turned around, and this guy was gone. The one in the black with the black coat and hat. I said to the guy with the people standing around in front of me, I said, where'd that guy go? And they said, what guy? I said, the guy that was sitting there right there. And there's anything. Nobody had seen this guy but me. And the bartender, I come over and I said, I called him. I said, where did this guy go? And he said, what guy? I said, this guy that we got him a drink. He said, gee, I don't know. Nobody's seen that guy but me.
Very interesting.
Was he a ghost or was he an E.T.?
For some reason, he decided to drop into your bar and share a drink with you.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, very strange.
If you're a ghost. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there. Hello. I got to let that person go. Let's go first to the Rockies. First-time caller. Hi there.
Hey, my name is Daniel from Bakersfield, California.
Hi, Daniel. Thanks for calling.
I got a question for our metaphysical witch. Hey, I just have an idea, because I'll just say straight up, I believe in an entity such as Satan, and I believe an entity as God, the Father. But you were talking earlier about the Christian image and the view of Satan and how he has pointy ears, you know, and the pointy serpent-like tail, you know, this whole image and stuff. And I was just curious to see whether you would, you know, what you think about this, but did you ever think that maybe Satan is more of a beautiful image instead? Because we, you know, like sin, for example, as we see sin as evil, the word sin is evil, and the things we do that are sin is evil, such as, you know, like committing adultery in a marriage or murder or anything like that. You know, we see that as evil. Now, those things are pleasurable to a person.
Exactly. Now, it depends. It's all relative.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, what would you say if I said, no, I believe the image of Satan is more of a beautiful image?
I would tell you that you are 100% correct if you believe in the Christian, Lucifer was considered the most beautiful of the angels, and it was
angel
his vanity that made him fall from heaven and be turned into this satanic figure. It was ego and vanity that did that to him, but you're absolutely right. Lucifer was a beautiful creature, a beautiful angel.
On the flip side to that, God... you said the suffering and the things in the world, like war and famine, that we also see as something that's evil. You said there can't be a God because we see all these evil things, these suffering things, and it can't be a God who's all loving and caring. Well, why wouldn't we need a God if there were these sufferings? Now, does that make sense to you? Am I making sense?
You are making sense, and you know it's personal opinion and experience. But in my opinion, that takes the responsibility off of us. If we believe in a God that we can, you know, a God that we can look to save us out of every sin or mistake that we make, and we believe in a devil that we can blame all of our sin and mistakes on, that takes us out of the picture. And I, you know, personally,
I'm not saying blame, and I'm not saying that Satan is the cause of the things. I'm saying that we do have a choice, and the things that we do should be on us. But there's also a salvation, and there's also something that is forgiving and loving out there that that is watching out for you, even when you stumble, even when you screw up, you know, even when there is famine in the world. That's why we need a God. That's why we need a Savior.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting. That's interesting.
Okay, I appreciate you being on the program. A couple more calls to go, and we will be out of time. Wildcard line, you're on with Marie Jones. Hi there.
Hi, I'm Ron from Flagstaff.
Hey, Ron.
And it's a pleasure listening to you tonight. You talked about coincidence earlier, and a remarkable coincidence started when you were playing the bumper music from Cusco, because I have that disc, and I was just fooling around testing my DVD and listening to that music for the first time, and I thought, this means I've got to call him.
Exactly, and I love that sound, don't you?
Yes, I do. It's just delightful. I bought it when Art was advertising it 10 years ago, and I ordered it. But it goes to, I want to make this quick, and it leads to an earlier caller. 14 years ago, I was falling off the edge of the world and had lost a fortune. And I began to have spiritual communications, and I read the Course in Miracles and was practicing that. And over the next 7 years, I came to the bottom and was at death's door and prayed earnestly. And then I'm continually having these angelic appearances. People like this guy just talked about. Somebody appeared in a pure white suit and told me, don't go praying out to God. He's in here, and pointed to his heart, and then he disappeared. But anyway, the whole point of this is, 7 years later, I came to the point where I had lost everything. I had lost my life. I had lost what I knew of myself. I lost my marriage. I lost everything, and I was destitute. And I was talking to the spirit that is and said, I don't even know who I am. And then it said, shaman. And coincidentally, I was living in Albuquerque, New Mexico at the time. Then I began the shamanic journey. And I don't know if you know about the man who has the Gnostic Society Library, and I can't remember his name, but I listened to his lectures, and he talked about the shaman. When you start the shamanic journey, your spirit will be cleaved to the point that you have to have strength to survive it spiritually.
Right.
And that happened to me over the ensuing 7 years, which brought me to this point.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was experiencing was these massive mold infections because I had a heavy mercury poisoning at a very early age, and that subdued my body's ability to deal with funguses. And I lived 25 years in Houston, Texas, where they proliferate. And what they do to you is they create this terrible feeling of self-abnegation and depression, and you don't know why it is.
Right.
And I called to refer to the truck driver who called earlier. And I pray that he's still listening, and that he will get his home checked for mold. Because when you leave your house for a few hours and you feel all better,
there's environmental toxins.
And they will hurt you badly unto death, and they will bring you to where you believe that you are nothing. And this is what happened to me. And just coincidentally, I knew nothing from shaman. I grew up in a fundamentalist Christian religion, and I didn't know what shaman was.
Right.
Well, then it told me I was a shaman in 97 years ago, in 99. And I said, okay, I'm a shaman, right, you know. But in the ensuing years, I have taken the shamanic courses, and I have undergone the shamanic journey, and I have found my spirit guides and animals and things like that. But I have never, ever deserted the belief that Jesus Christ is the one who came to me, because he was the name whose name I was calling when the voice came into my life and literally led me away from death's door and told me what to do, and it was go natural. And when you go natural and you start working with herbs, the spirit comes. And I'm telling you, it's all together.
It's all connected. That's a wonderful story, and I'm glad that it's got a positive ending for you.
It has been, and now I'm starting a new life at the age of 63.
There you go, see?
Okay, well, thank you. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi. Hi, George.
Yeah, go ahead. Hello there. Go ahead. Just have a couple minutes left.
Oh, okay. I just want to truly your guest and say that I read Lynn McTaggart's book, too, Crazy About It.
Isn't it great?
Right on with the Wicca stuff. And have you heard about duality? Have you studied duality?
Yeah, I did. And, you know, it's funny because duality is a very big thing in religion, but it's present everywhere in nature. And ultimately, if we're going to have any wholeness, we need to incorporate duality and understand it and find a way to balance it out. I believe that duality exists. Sure.
Yeah, I just loaned a book about duality to a yoga teacher. And my roommate is a Reiki instructor.
Uh-huh.
And I just have tons of friends here that are Wicca, and it's growing, and
it's becoming.
I'm thrilled to death that you're on tonight. Also, I do see like these atomic particles kind of things. I can't really explain it, but I can only see them when I'm not looking for them. You know, they're not floaters, and they're not anything that anybody else. I've seen them in a magazine described as prions or something.
Interesting. They have a lot of. They're nasty.
Well, these things that
the prions are nasty.
They collide and then they spin in opposite directions and they look like little comets.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you can't focus on them. You can kind of see them go by, but you can't follow them with your eyes or anything.
That's part of the problem with the quantum with particles is that you cannot get a position on a particle without compromising its form.
Quantum physics, it's called science with a PSIENCE. Marie Jones, the author. Marie, thanks for being on the program.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was wonderful.
I had a great time. For Steve Carr, Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lottasur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.